Well, welcome to Grumpy Strategist. This is episode 43, and I'm your host, Michael Shoebridge from Strategic Analysis Australia. And I have a real treat for our listeners today because we've got an entirely new and different kind of guest, and I'm delighted it's our first ambassador-level guest on the program. I have Douglas Su, the senior Taiwanese representative here in Australia, on the podcast. So welcome. Welcome, Douglas.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, for this a good opportunity for me to be able to talk directly with your audience.
Great. Well, we have quite a bit to talk about, and we're recording this on the day that the World Health Assembly meeting for this year concludes in Geneva. And I would have to say I found the Assembly disappointing because there was a real opportunity there, I think, to strengthen global cooperation on health and for governments participating, like the Australian government, to strengthen this key multilateral and international organisation. And I think they could have done that by including Taiwan. And that hasn't happened at this meeting.
Yes, well, indeed, the WHA just concluded their annual assembly this year, today. And so we are once again very disappointed about the outcome that Taiwan hasn't been invited to this a very important public health forum. However, there is no privilege for Taiwanese foreign service officers being pessimistic. So no. I think we will still have a kind of like a more positive analysis to this year's campaign. I think this year we got a lot more momentum and got more support from many like-minded countries around the world, including Australia.
Well, I did see that, so I think it was the British office, the Czech office, the French office, the Japanese office, the Australian office, and the Lithuanian office all spoke up and wrote, and the German office in Taiwan all wrote affirming their support for Taiwan's participation in both the World Health Assembly and the World Health Organization.
Yes.
So you could say that the support for Taiwan is gathering momentum. But
sure.
I might just remind listeners about why this is important. So to me, there are two big reasons. And the first one is Taiwan's capacity in public health. If we remember back to the really dark times of the COVID-19 pandemic, it was information out of Taiwan that Taiwan managed to get out of China that told the world a lot of the details about how the disease was working and gave early information that we just weren't getting out of China that allowed other countries to respond and manage the pandemic.
Well, that's true. I think Taiwan's WHO campaign started with a very unfortunate incident. But back in the late 1990s, the outbreak of the enteral virus in Taiwan that kills many school kids in Taiwan. So the government of Taiwan found that we have this responsibility to get Taiwan back to this Global Public Health Forum. So we started from that perspective. Taiwan, actually, we need to be part of that. We need help from the international community.
Because Taiwan can benefit from that international
capacity
as well. But and then with the SARS epidemic in the early 2000s, Taiwan was one of the standout countries that performed during that. That was also a coronavirus variant. So. So the simple capacity Taiwan has to contribute to global health is one reason that Taiwan must be part of the WHO.
That's right.
And the other reason, I think, is kind of geopolitical. And that is, right now, there are two big currents in geopolitics, I think. And one is the assertion by the Chinese Communist Party-led regime in Beijing of its power globally. And as part of that, its efforts to isolate Taiwan, a democratic nation. The other big current is the weakening of international institutions. And at this health assembly, the US is busy leaving the WHO. So to me, there's a double benefit in asserting the right of a place like Taiwan to participate,
mm-hmm.
because it strengthens a key international institution when the US, a really big player, is weakening.
Sure, sure.
And it also says to Beijing, isolating vibrant democracies is not something that other countries will just stand by and let mm-hmm. happen.
Yeah, well, very well said. I think Taiwan is definitely can play that role. As I say, that we started this WHO campaign by saying to the world that Taiwan needs help. But over the past two decades, we transformed that concept, become a Taiwan can help. And now, I think after the COVID, I think we proved that Taiwan not only can help, but we can lead many public health related issues. So I think this is the right moment to include Taiwan in.
Yes, yes. And a lot of the debate around Taiwan as part of the WHO is part of this bigger argument about the One China principle mm-hmm. and Taiwan's right to participate, not just in the WHO, but in multiple international mm-hmm. and UN institutions.
Yes.
And it might be good for you to remind people that a lot of this argument is all hinged on a very faulty foundation, which is the UN General Assembly Resolution 2758 mm-hmm. back in 1971 that gave the government of the People's Republic of China in Beijing the seat at the UN.
Mm-hmm.
But when I read that resolution, and I'll put a link on here on the podcast for our listeners, it does not say what Beijing says it says.
Well, that's very true, actually. You are very good students because you not only listen, but you look into the text. And as long as people spending time read the text of this UN resolution 2758, everybody can easily understand that there's nothing implied that Taiwan is part of China. And there's no way authorizing Beijing have the authority to represent Taiwan. And honestly, there's no word about Taiwan in this resolution at all. So for the past few decades, Beijing is taking advantage of their own interpretation and try to send this a misinformation to those countries, try to, tweak this kind of international document and have a different interpretation on that resolution, so that
yes.
will be preferred to Beijing's position on Taiwan.
Well, and the strange thing about this is, as you say, the text is very clear. It's not even very long. It's
no.
it's only four very short paragraphs.
Indeed.
And as you say, in none of those short paragraphs is Taiwan even mentioned.
No.
So Beijing unilaterally asserts
mm-hmm.
That it has sovereignty over Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not what the UN General Assembly has ever recognized.
That's right.
It reminds me of the way the Chinese government tries to tell our government here in Australia that we've signed up to the One China principle.
Mm-hmm.
And it does this with many countries around
mm-hmm,
the world.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at the short text of Australia's diplomatic recognition of the PRC, which
mm-hmm.
was back under Gough Whitlam
mm-hmm.
In 1972,
mm-hmm.
it again does not agree to China's view
mm-hmm.
that Taiwan is a part of China.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the language from our government was that we acknowledge the position of the Chinese government that Taiwan is a province of the People's Republic of China.
Mm-hmm.
So we acknowledged it
yeah.
as Beijing's
yeah.
view.
That's right.
But we never signed up to that view.
Yeah, well, that's another trick that Beijing likes to use, not only to Australia, but many other countries. Because, well, most of these democratic countries, they have this power transition. So the document one government signed on previously may not be like a fully transfers to the next government with a very detailed explanation. So along the way, that give Beijing the room to misinterpret it, and so and make the following government believe that they already sign on what Beijing mentioned.
Yes, yes, and if we're lazy and we don't actually check the facts, we can be convinced. So yeah. I would expect that in your your extraordinary career as a diplomat, in not just in Australia but other places like the US, you have had to remind people many, many times of what their own government has actually agreed.
Yeah.
And what the UN has done and not done. And I'm reminded of that saying, adult education is all about repetition.
That's right. Just like you say, in my previous job in Washington, I've been talking or sharing these points with my counterpart in Washington. And I'm really grateful that over the years, more and more people are aware of the nuance in the text. And understand that, well, they have to be more precise interpreting their own policy,
yes.
Not be led or misled by the other government.
Well, I think that will be a challenge for many governments over the coming years, because there's increasing pressure coming from the government in Beijing.
Yeah.
And so it becomes more important to understand the basis of our own policy.
Yeah.
Now, another big thing that's happening right now, and many countries are dealing with this, is the trade relationship with America. And of course, Taiwan has enormous investments in America, and there are the two-way trade centered particularly on the semiconductor industry is important globally because of Taiwan's role as a high technology provider for the world. How does that look to you? I saw from President Lai's anniversary address to the Taiwanese people that he's pretty positive about how negotiations are going, and he's really clear that Taiwan is going to remain an open free trading a place and both attract investment and make investments.
Well, indeed. Well, that is the Taiwanese government's commitment, not only to our own people, but to the world, that Taiwan will stand firm and keep ourselves a free and open society so that we can still play a role in the global supply chain. With regard to our trade relations with the United States, you saw from the news the largest, the world largest semiconductor manufacturing company, TSMC, have made an announcement of a new investment in the United States to making sure that they continue to play an essential role in the U.S. economy. But other than the semiconductor industry, the overall trade relations between Taiwan and the United States is quite strong, no matter it's on the other manufacturing industry or like a pharmaceutical industry or agricultural as well. We have this very close relations with each other, so I think that will still be the situation for the years to come.
And certainly when I look at the scale of the TSMC investments now, I think they would be some of the biggest investments into American high technology manufacturing globally.
Yes.
It's up to about $165 billion, and that first TSMC plant in Arizona is already starting production, I think.
That's right. So, but fortunately, I don't think that is just a one-way investment flow. Last week, you saw this Computex in Taipei. The NVIDIA also made a investment, or not an investment announcement, but an announcement to make their new headquarters in Taipei, because they understand that Taiwan is a base for the future development of the artificial intelligence.
Yes, and a company like NVIDIA, which is really at the heart of the AI revolution, making a very strong bet about its future and saying that's not just in America, but it's in Taiwan as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big indication about the direction of technology and production. But then again, that's not really, that's good new news, but it fits with a pattern already. I think Google mm-hmm. has its largest research and development yes. center outside America in Taiwan already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's true. Google, Microsoft as well, they all made a investment in Taiwan to set up a data center, among others. So I think for those high-tech companies, they understand that Taiwan is a very important hub for all these high-tech-related industries. And that's why they need to invest in Taiwan and chose Taiwan as a partner for their own companies.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, so I think that patient but positive approach that Taiwan's taking,
mm-hmm.
That's one that other countries are paying attention to in working with America. And
mm-hmm.
certainly, personally, I hope it's very successful, not just for Taiwan, but sets a pattern for others dealing with the Trump administration. At this same time, though, there's a record amount of military intimidation happening of Taiwan
mm-hmm.
From the PLA, Beijing's party military.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading a report that said the first 2 months of 2025 have been a historic volume and tempo of Chinese military presence around Taiwan and going over the median line down the straits.
Mm-hmm.
Even compared with the previous record level of presence just last year.
Mm-hmm.
So while the world is distracted by many things,
mm-hmm.
all the trade things with America, the war in Ukraine, the conflict in the Middle East, China is continuing on this very dangerous track of intimidation militarily of Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that is true. We also observe the trend of increasing number of PLA's jet fighters, naval vessel, drones, and even hot balloons intrusions to Taiwan's ADIZ, as well as sea waters. So I think that that is why the government of Taiwan has been putting a lot of efforts beefing up our defense capabilities. And that is also President Lai's commitment to increase the defense budget. And now for this year, we have our defense budgets up almost to 3% mm-hmm. of our GDP. So, that is definitely a sign, a signal for all the like-minded partners. We care about our own securities, and we have clear eye of what is happening in that part of the world, and we are doing what we can to prevent those worst scenario from happening.
Well, and it's not just the money. I think lifting that spend to about 3% of GDP mm-hmm. is important, but I've seen that the Taiwanese government has held pretty significant civil defense exercises.
Yes.
So it's not
yes.
just about the military, it's not just about the government,
mm-hmm.
it's about critical infrastructure operators and civil society.
Mm-hmm.
So those resilience exercises
mm-hmm.
Seem to me to be an important part of this strategy as well.
Yes, well, indeed. I think whole of society resilience is the main topic that our national security team put a lot of efforts in. In addition to, upgrading or updating our civil defense or mobilization system and training as well, we also increase this energy resilience, telecommunication resilience, making sure that we have enough food storage, water storage, making sure the distribution of those medicine will be smoothly and fluently during any contingency scenario.
Mm, blockade or other contingency.
Yeah.
Well, as sitting here in Australia, a partner of Taiwan's, I think those measures to make Taiwan more resilient and able to withstand that pressure from Beijing, that makes you a more powerful partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that deterring China from any military adventurism to attack Taiwan becomes easier. And so that's very encouraging for Taiwan's partners mm-hmm. to see that happening. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I recall that a few years back, I would say 10 years ago, many like-minded countries have doubt about our determination of defending ourselves. Not only what we spend in the defense budget, but what we've been doing mm-hmm. by, shorten the service time for the, every young man when they were their conscription, I would say. Yeah, so, but now we are doing the different ways. I think we increase our defense budget and we do it more so that people can understand that we are serious.
Well, you know, here in Australia, we're bumping along at 2% of GDP on defense. We've got an enormous country and exclusive economic zone to protect.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be lifting our spending too. So it's great to see Taiwan doing it, but I'd like to have a conversation with you in future months saying, well, good news, Australia is meeting. The other thing that I noticed recently, and we're probably getting towards the end, I suppose, we've covered a lot of ground, is President Lai's one-year anniversary speech was quite different to his inaugural speech.
Mm-hmm.
To me, reading it, it was all about what Taiwan and the Taiwanese people can do in turbulent times. So he was talking about the commitment to getting to net zero and the importance of
mm-hmm.
Adaption to climate change and mm-hmm. energy.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about national resilience, and you've spoken about that, yes. Douglas. And then he was talking about the economy.
Yes.
What he didn't talk about was much about the relationship with Beijing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that observation is quite right, because this is the one-year anniversary of President Lai's inauguration. So I think his message to Taiwanese people is that, since he now is the president of Taiwan, he understands that what Taiwanese people want and need in this period of time. So he would like to definitely focus on those important issues, such as energy resilience, the economic and trade, as well as the whole of society resilience, make Taiwan become a more resilient island. The reason for him not to mention about China, I think it is because we understand that over the past few years, when we talk about China or cross-Taiwan Strait-related issues, everybody have their own text. We can never find a common point, or we cannot get any consensus.
Yes, people look at it from many, many different angles. And I thought it sent a signal that the Taiwanese government wants a better relationship and is open to dialogue. I think he mentioned the term mutual respect.
Indeed.
Several times.
Sure.
And really, that to me is the right basis for mm-hmm. relations, not just between Taiwan and Beijing, but
mm-hmm.
Taiwan and every other nation, Australia sure. and every other nation.
Yes.
And that term mutual respect mm-hmm. is one we hear so much from Beijing. You know,
yeah.
we must all have mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, I thought it was a positive signal to Beijing that
mm-hmm.
A far better relationship is absolutely open
mm-hmm.
if that simple ground rule of mutual respect is met.
Sure. Well, I think that is very well said. I think in addition to the mutual respect, I think President Lai also focus on the dignity as well.
Mm.
Yeah, because you cannot just force Taiwan to accept the term that is in favor of Beijing. If you want to engage with a dialogue, you definitely need to focus on the mutual respect, parities, and dignity as well.
We're almost back to words are important,
mm-hmm.
but actions that give life to those words
are
fundamental. So
that's true.
It's a little bit like the one China principle problem, isn't it? The words are very important, but
yes.
the behavior behind the words
yes.
is equally important.
Being a diplomat, it is our job to read into those small things in the wording or text. Yeah.
Yes, well, Douglas, this has been a great conversation for me. I think you're showing the benefit of the experience you've had in the different roles you've played in your career for Taiwan. And I know the thing that brought this conversation together was that meeting happening in Geneva around the World Health Assembly. And all I'd say is that is unfinished business.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be great to see like-minded partners like Australia and Taiwan
mm-hmm.
working not just on strengthening the WHO,
mm-hmm.
but also strengthening regional trade. And
sure.
I can't help but mention the Comprehensive Partnership on Trans-Pacific mm-hmm. Trade, TPP,
yeah.
The very high standard trade
mm-hmm.
agreement that Australia is a party to.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see Taiwan join that. For all those reasons we were talking about Taiwan's approach to trade and
mm-hmm.
the economy.
Yeah, well, indeed, that is also one thing that we've been working really hard from Taiwan's perspective. We officially submit our applications to become a CPTPP members a couple of years ago. And well, I think over the past few years, CPTPP member state was focusing on the UK's accession,
mm-hmm.
and now they already concluded the UK's accession. And last year, they started this a new round of negotiation with Costa Rica. So being an applicant of CPTPP, Taiwan believes that we have the capacity to meet all the CPTPP commitment, and we also have a very good track record that we will follow all the commitment we made. One thing that we perhaps need to do more about this CPTPP's Auckland principle is to getting the consensus among member states. As far as we know that there are still some CPTPP members, they are battling about this trade benefit to have Taiwan in, and well, the political pressure from Beijing if Taiwan been included. So I think our point is that growth and prosperity is over geopolitics.
Yeah. Well, this is a trade agreement.
Indeed.
And it's about meeting the standards of this very high-quality trade agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be very hard to do a credible assessment of Taiwan and not conclude that Taiwan meets those standards.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think this is an opportunity for a government like Australia's. We've heard from our Prime Minister that he has a deep commitment to
mm-hmm.
multilateralism and to international
yes.
institutions and to free and open trade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, supporting Taiwan's membership of the CPTPP is an opportunity for our re-elected government
mm-hmm.
to put those principles into action. So maybe we can talk again when that happens, Douglas. But it's been wonderful having you on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. And well, Taiwan definitely can be a good partner to Australia and to the region. And more importantly, I think the value of democracy that has been practiced in Taiwan have shown to the world that Taiwan is a reliable partner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lovely to talk with you, Douglas. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.